Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we are going to be talking about relationships. We're going to be talking about the wonderful skill of communication that all of us can become more refined with. I don't care what cultural level of generation you are in, communication has always been a big issue. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone that you're close to, and at the end of the argument, or shall I say the exchanging of words, you find you basically have been trying to say the same thing, but you've been communicating differently? And what about those delightful teenagers in your environment? Yes. Well, we're going to be talking about that and more with a gentleman whose book title I was really intrigued with when I met him in New York. He calls himself the Conflict Whisperer. His name is Roger Frame, and the title of the book is Don't Carve the Turkey with a Chainsaw. This is about resolving family conflict. Roger, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Donna.
Well, this poor turkey you've got on the front of your book really is just absolutely a visual that is unequaled. If whoever did this for you really had a wonderful imagination with a chainsaw coming up out of the ground and clipping some of its tail feathers off. Roger, you're a man with tremendous credentials behind you. You are licensed professional counselor. You're a school psychologist. You work in Colorado. You've gone to a number of universities, and you have a blog. You've done all kinds of work with all kinds of people. You've been a family mediator. You were working with the Florida Society of Psychotherapists at one time. You've just had this background, and I'm aware that this background had a very strong influence on your putting this book together. And I found it, well, I found your approach rather unique. In fact, your chapter one is titled, To Roast or Deep Fry. It's all about perception. I said, okay, how in the world, first of all, did you ever come up with this title?
Well, the titles are a matter of taking a look at it. To Roast or Deep Fry, we tried to make all the titles related to the title of the book with the turkey theme. So we were talking about, how do we deal with it? And we were trying to take a look at the issues of perception and how important frequently our problems with a conflict are really not in the objective facts of what's going on, but how people are interpreting that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I start the book by taking a look at a time when I was up at our mountain house. Actually, the mountain house is about 15 miles away from the fires that we're having in Colorado. But I was up at the mountain house one night and woke up in the middle of the night, and there's absolutely gorgeous stars up there that you can just see millions. And I went out entranced, and I watched, and as the dawn broke, I noticed that the stars disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this sort of relates to conflict. You know, so frequently we think that our opinion is correct, but, you know, if we go and take a look at the stars, are the stars there if we can't see them? I then went down to, you know, the pond, and I went fishing. And you look in, and you see just a gorgeous shimmering on the lake. And a pretty scene, but you don't see much underneath the surface. So I put on my polarized sunglasses, and I look in, and now I can go and see some fish swimming around the rocks and other kinds of stuff. Are the fish there if we can't see them? the same kind of thing in terms of how we deal with conflict so frequently. We don't even take a look at what the other person's side is. We think that if we're looking at the shimmering lake, they're looking at the shimmering lake as well. And they may be looking at the fish underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. I think that is so true. I can remember when I finally realized often the conversations I had with my husband, and I'm sure there are many people listening to this at this time that can relate on one level or another, but I would find that I would get very agitated over something. He was getting very agitated over something, and about 15 or 20 minutes later, it dawned on me, we were talking about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We really had the same objective, but we had different ways of presenting it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of goes along with what they say about people witnessing a crime or seeing something happening, depending on where you are, depending on what your mind perception is and your visual perception is and your emotional perception.
Mm-hmm.
All of these come in. You can have 10,000 different versions of one single event. And some will say, well, that's not logical. But it really is when you get down to it. Because,
yeah,
as you said, we all have our filters. And I don't care who we are. We all have them. And what's important to one person isn't important to another. And this is part of what you address. Now, you make a comment. I mean, I was talking about my husband and my communication. You said, in research, it shows most people think about their partner's viewpoint only 1% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that implies that we're all pretty self-centered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but basically, you know, when we're in an argument, we're listening to what our partner has to say in order to find a fault in what it is so that we can then go and show them the wisdom of our ways.
Mhm. It's a fascinating level to become aware of,
mm-hmm,
that in truth we all are looking at things from our own framework of experience. And that is something that is really, really tough for people to understand. And as a counselor myself, there are so many different environments that people come from. I mean, there's just as many different perceptions, if not more, than there are actual people. And so many things come into play. And I remember someone asking me once after I'd given a talk, what do you think is more important, environment, education, personality? And I said, they're all important. I couldn't make one the mm-hmm issue or the thing, because you can't fit people into that little compartmentalization of a box.
Absolutely. And we tend to assume that everybody views it the same way as we do. And it's particularly when you get cross-cultural kinds of things where other
mm-hmm
people have different situations. But it's not just cross-cultural. I mean, families grow up with different norms that you grow up. And if you have one family that tends to avoid conflict, or the stereotypical Italians that go and are very emotional, and you put those together without understanding, then you've got some potential blow-ups that may come in.
Oh, yes. And that is, I think, one of the biggest challenges that we have as people. Now, you make a comment right at the beginning of your book that frequently people have hidden agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And there we get into the game of manipulation. And you also touch upon, in your own way, domestic violence cases,
mm-hmm,
where so many times it's just not someone punching somebody else. There's a lot more going on. And I really liked your statement right at the very beginning of the book where you said people have to take personal responsibility. If they want to change, they're the ones that have to change.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try to change somebody else.
There's only one person that we really can control, and that's ourselves.
Right.
But, you know, the only person that likes to have a change is a baby in a wet diaper.
Oh, I love that Mark Twain quote. I read that.
Yeah.
And
it's easy to go and say, they need to change. They need to go do this. It's not so easy to go and say, wait a minute, what can I do about this? And if I change, maybe they may change too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, in relationships, the competitive person. And so frequently I find that this is often attributed to the male. And I think a lot of it, and this is just my observation, a lot of it is indoctrination, social indoctrination, other components, and men and women are very different. I think the guy that wrote about Venus and Mars, it was right on the money, because there are specific things many times that are different. But, hey, I've known women that are razor blade competitive. And
Well, and people tend to be a little more competitive on the workplace than at home, too. So that they may vary their own. Even competitive people are less competitive in an intimate relationship. So.
And it's dominant often. It's like, I want to dominate you. I'm going to push you out of the way. And we have all kinds of things here. What would you say to a person that is in an environment where, and I'll give an issue with one of my clients that they had experienced. This is an extremely intelligent woman. She was in, I would say, a mid-management positioning. The boss over the company was one of these razor blade, competitive, cutting edge, I'm going to keep everybody cut down to where they're supposed to be kind of people. And she individually was very, very much involved with being ethical and doing certain things. And this boss didn't care how she cut the corners. This is what she was going to do. Now, this could be a male-female, you know, female-male situation. It's a scenario. This happens to involve two women. How would you advise someone to work in that environment where you have someone that is just of that high, it's my way or the highway kind of situation?
When you get, you know, there isn't one answer to it because it depends on how they respond when you try the first kind of situation. You may try, even if they're competitive, sometimes if you deal with a collaborative approach first, then they will come around. But with a competitive person, frequently they won't. And then you have to make a decision of, okay, am I going to go and be competitive as well? Because a competitive person is basically saying, my needs are primary, and I don't care what it does to you. And if they maintain that and continue to maintain that, then we're talking about a different power struggle. And you have a choice. You can go and take a look and say, okay, am I going to give in to that and accommodate to that? Or am I going to try to figure out what are their interests, what's important to them, and then try to get my own interests met through meeting their interests. In other words, point out how what you want to get done really furthers their own interests and is in their best interest. But going with a competitive person, if they maintain competitiveness, you're probably going to have to go a little competitive with them.
You bring up a term, accommodation, in your book, and you say accommodation. We just talked about a competitive environment. You mentioned about how we try to work with someone to achieve our own goal, showing this person how much it will be an advantage to them. But you make a comment about being an accommodating personality, that if someone does this grudgingly with resentment, it's not going to be good. And someone that's truly accommodating is very much willing to make the self-sacrifice. And then you have someone else that's the martyr. Oh, look at what I've done for you, type of thing. And martyrs, to me, I mean, that kind of a situation, they're all dead as far as I'm concerned. Martyrs aren't around anyway. And I'll say that to people, and their eyes get real big. And I said, well, think about it. Do you know of any of them that are alive? No, they've all been idealized in people's minds, and that's fine. But they're not around to say anything or do anything. So where do you want to put yourself? And you made a comment in your book that I really liked. You said the greatest risk with accommodation is that the root of the conflict is never addressed. If someone gives in, there's no need to explore each person's desires and needs, and the accommodating person does not get their needs met. That is so true.
And there's sometimes when, you know, accommodation is appropriate. Any parent knows about accommodation. You go and give up some of the things that you might like to do to go and take your child to their, music lessons or their piano or whatever kinds of things, and you do it willingly to develop their growth, and that's fine. The problem is when you start resenting that and gets in the way and you don't deal with it. If you don't deal and give in all the time, then you're not really taking a look at what's going on, and so you don't have that important discussion about what's the real problem here.
Now, let's look at a case or a situation where you have dealt with this, where you've tried to show people how this doesn't serve their purposes.
The accommodation? Okay. I'm trying to think in terms of how it doesn't serve their purposes. Then we're talking about, first of all, we have to identify what is their needs. So take a parent. Is feeling overwhelmed and isn't feeling supported by their spouse at all, so they're feeling resented for having to go and do some of the activities. Mm-hmm. Well, what are the real interests that are going on? The interests are, one might be, I need to have some free time by myself. Another interest is going to be, well, the child needs to get to piano practice. Then you've got the other person's interests who might be, wait a minute, I need to be at work. Well, how do we go and resolve all of those interests at the same time? Well, when do they have to be at work? Do they have any flexibility in the job? Who else is available? So often what we do is we focus our time on the positions, that is, how we want to go and our response, that we don't take a look at what's behind it, the interests of it. Why is it that I'm taking that position? And that would be one where you're going, and there may be several interests. I mean, maybe, our time, but I also want to be going and playing with some other friends during that period of time, and the issues conflict. Are there ways that we can go and meet those? So that would be an example of how we can go and deal with the competing interests.
In dealing with different situations, you say to avoid asking why questions, and it made me chuckle when I was reading that. I think of the precocious 2-year-old who goes, why? Why? they have some
all the
they
time.
Have some commercials out on this where, kids going, why is that? How come? Da-da. And the salesman's just going bonkers. It's a car commercial. And I laugh every time I see it because they know that there is this agitation that's promoted with questioning. Why did you, and I'm going to ask a why question, why did you select that one word? Why not what or when?
And, I confess that I have a hard time on this one, too, because I like to ask, well, why did you do that? The reason for trying to avoid why rather than using who, what, when, where, or how is that why, for some reason, tends to make people more defensive. Why did you do this? There's an underlying assumption that you shouldn't have done that. Whereas I'm curious, what was your thinking when you did this doesn't create quite as much defensiveness. So it's sort of a question that is loaded when you go and ask it with a why question. And it's preferable if it's who, what, when, where, and how. So
you
that's why.
You mentioned a word that I think is very important, defensiveness. Dependent on how a person's been raised, what their personality type is, when people direct questions at us, their posturing, their voice, and I can relate to certain personal experiences that I've had where someone will have this very strong stance and have this you don't know attitude, and sometimes it's a bullying attitude, sometimes it's a very competitive attitude. How do you recommend people deal with this? I don't know of anybody that hasn't had to face something like this. And usually we have to gain some kind of experience with this. But defensiveness is a very, you know, that's an emotional reaction many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Because you feel like you're in danger. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I can remember when I was younger that certain things would be said, and they were like triggers because of certain experiences I had had. And so I didn't want to talk. I wouldn't communicate. I'd just clam up.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to someone about that?
Well, and, you know, it's very, very much like if you're fly fishing. And those trigger words that come in, if you think about them, and certain kinds of things tend to trigger you all the time, it's just like they've gone and selected the lure that's going to go and catch you, and they toss the cast out there, and they're going to start reeling you in. Kids are just experts doing this.
Oh, they're marvelous.
And they know, and they've been around you long enough, so they know exactly what lures are going to work, and they know, well, this lure might work early in the morning, but forget it later at night, or later at night when you're tired, this one really works well, so they know which ones work when.
Mm-hmm.
If you can see that coming and recognize it as a lure, just like the fish. The fish comes in there and they have to go and decide fairly quickly, is this going to be a real fly that's going to be yummy to eat, or is this a lure that's going to catch me and land me in the frying pan?
Mm-hmm.
So that you need to learn to go and see the hook coming and identify it for what it is. Once you see patterns coming in, then you can do it more easily. Another thing that you can do is ask yourself, why would a rational, reasonable person want to go and do that kind of behavior? It seems contradictory to me, but they're doing it. They must see some advantage to it. Why would they do that? Those two ways help you to not take it personally. And when you not take it personally, then you don't respond as defensively.
That's very true. And that's something I think we have to be willing to learn. It doesn't mean that it takes away compassion or anything like that. It means that you are detached in a way where you don't give someone else the power to injure,
mm-hmm.
to make you feel vulnerable. You take your strength as an individual, and you recognize that you have a right and place to that. And I think that is something I think all of us have to go through and learn to
mm-hmm.
one level or another. I want to address something that today in our country and around the world, something that is being very, very much an example of what we don't want. And it's part of your chapter that says creating safety in the coop.
Mm-hmm.
And it deals with trust. And I think that this is so significant. And you make a statement, dishonesty destroys trust when the deception is revealed. We can look at that and see so many examples of that in today's world.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about the difference between diplomatic honesty that saves face and destructive honesty that destroys self-esteem, and that it's not developed through good intentions alone. You have to achieve results to be credible. In other words, you have to walk the walk, not
mm-hmm.
just talk the talk. You have to walk the walk. And you bring that out in relationships with people. You talk about parents threatening their children but not following through. And when I say threatening, they're not threatening to kill them. Although that thought may have crossed their mind, depending on the circumstances. But they'll say, you're not going to go to soccer practice because of what you've done. And then they end up taking him to soccer practice anyway.
Yeah.
So,
and that destroys trust just as much as lying or fraudulent kind of activities, because they mm-hmm. know, hey, you know, they aren't going to follow through. I don't have to worry about it.
Right. And that is so very important. Nonverbal intention is part of this, too. Discuss that for a moment.
Well, there's been a number of studies concerning how do we communicate and what do people really take from it. And how do you tell if what a person is really saying is what they really mean? And so what they take a look at, some of the ways you can deal with that is to take a look at, are the nonverbal communications, the intonation of their voice, their body language, is that consistent with what they're saying? If you've got someone who says, "I'm not angry. What do you mean I'm angry?" Mm-hmm. That's not consistent with the body language or the intonation. So you go and say, "Wait a minute, you know, this isn't making sense. Maybe that what they're saying isn't the actual kind of behavior that's happening." So are they consistent? And frequently, people go and rely much more heavily on body language than they do in terms of what you say. I could say, you know, "Boy, that was really great." Or I could say, "Boy, that was really great." You know, what was it, Stephen Covey, the church lady who had that great phrase, that was a very sarcastic kind of comment. "Oh, isn't that special?"
Mm-hmm.
You could say, "Oh, isn't that special? Wow." You know, and it really means that that's really great. Or Dana Carvey's, "Isn't that special?" Mm-hmm. Which is almost a put-down. Well, my words are exactly the same. The nonverbals changes the meaning considerably.
Avoiding premature judgment. Boy, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
There is this part of the human personality, and I think it's part of our survival kit,
mm-hmm.
where we are instantaneously making assessments.
Yep.
Premature assessments. It's just automatic. And one I'm thinking of is a young man who was participating in some competition. When he stepped up on stage, he looked like something that had been dumped out of a dump truck.
Mm-hmm.
He was obese. His hair was long. Everybody was laughing. And even the people that were on the panel observing him were just, "Boy, just when you think you've seen all the dumpy dumps in the world, here we have this dumpy dump that's in front of us."
Mm-hmm.
And this could be heard by this mm-hmm. young man. Well, the competition started. He opens his mouth, and everybody's holding their breath. This is the most spectacular voice that's come out of this dumpy dump look
mm-hmm.
you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
And they're blown away.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Well, and you had that with Susan Boyle when she
yes.
appeared, I think it was on American Idol.
Yes.
And, you know, came in sort of a dumpy, didn't have her hair done up with a stylish look, and then came in with such a gorgeous voice that just blew people away.
Right. And that came to my mind when I came across your section on premature judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And I know through the years, I've been guilty of that, and through the years I've learned just to put things aside until people have a chance really to show themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And not always, even then, have I been able to get the correct assessment about a person because I wanted to see something that wasn't there, which, again, I think we all do. But it is something that I have learned through experience that appearances are very, very deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to think carefully and allow things. Sometimes appearances are exactly how they are. But you need there is, again, that learning curve. And I know we're just about out of time, but your book, Don't Carve the Turkey with a Chainsaw, that poor turkey, losing some of his tail feathers on the front of the book. Again, the logo is just terrific. Roger, you have a website people can go to. You also have a blog. Your website is rogerframe.com. Roger.
Yep,
Frame.
Just think about Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, there we go. Very good statement. And then also the conflictwhisperer.com. And mm-hmm. your blog will be connected through that as well. Is there a parting thought you'd want to leave with my listeners this morning?
Well, I think that the critical thing is that relatively subtle changes in your communication style can really make a huge difference in terms of how it's received. And to go and take a look at that and just be aware of some of the things that you might be able to do are just critical.
I agree. And by the way, there's a wonderful chapter in here on dealing with teenagers. You don't want to miss reading it. No, I'm not going to talk about it right now. You're going to have to get the book. Don't carve the turkey with a chainsaw. My guest, Roger Frame. Go to his website, rogerframe.com. This is Donna Sebo. Thank you so much for being with us, Roger. It's been a delight. And continue to do your work, because, boy, we really need to know more of this.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna.
You're more than welcome. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. By the way, get your pad of paper together along with your pen, because I've got a wonderful antipasto tortellini salad that I want to share that recipe with you. It's perfect for the warm summer months. Hey, telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we are going to be talking with Lou Paradise. We're going to be discussing some health items, and I think anytime we can learn about how to take care of ourselves better, it's really an advantage. So Lou is going to be with us, and then we've got some other guests coming up this week. Fascinating information on thinking about engines, energy conservation, what can we do, ESP, well, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. That's part of what goes on with the Donna Sebo Show. Okay, I have two more signs of the zodiac that I need to finish for a summer horoscope. Let me finish those up today. It's going to be for Leo and Virgo. And again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. For those of you born under the sign of Leo, you need to pay attention to your relationships. If you have anyone in your environment that you perceive as a drain, in other words, they're one of these individuals that's a user or a loser, detach. Separate yourself, because it is time for you to open up to new associations that are going to be more supportive of you and that are going to enable you to move forward in life. Just don't go by emotions. Really go by what you know. If a tomato is a tomato, it's a tomato. It's not an asparagus. So you want to be sure that you're paying attention to the facts. Success and money. You do like the green stuff. Well, for that matter, who doesn't? But you really are going to need to pay attention to how you want to manage your money. You, born under the Leo sign, you often want to impress people and you want to have the best. Okay, that's all right. But pay attention. You want to be sure that you're going to have some funds available to yourself so that you can have more of what you want. Study and learn about how to work with money effectively and well. This is a year for you to lay out those plans for your future. And by golly, don't expect to win at a lottery, but you are going to find that something that you've wanted for a long time is going to have the opportunity to come into positioning where you can achieve it. I don't care if it's a crock pot or if it's a career aspiration. There is going to be an opportunity for you to attain what you deeply want, but you're going to think about how you can do this so that it is going to work well for you. So no mad buying sprees. And you are, again, going to have all kinds of opportunities for positive relationships in your life, but you've got to let go of what doesn't work. For those of you born under the sign of Virgo, you are going to find yourself really wanting to concentrate on your home life, could be involved with some remodeling, but it's as if the home is your castle. When you go into your home, that has to represent what you want. So if you've got a clutter problem, get rid of the clutter. Virgos really need to have that clean, safe, stable environment around them. It really is their place to recuperate. Also, for success and money, you're going to be taking on some new responsibilities, and it's important for you to recognize you don't want to overkill, but you are going to realize that your discipline and your determination of finishing and tidying up whatever has been hanging out there in midair is going to be to your advantage. You want to make sure that you finish what you have started. Don't procrastinate. You want to really get things done. And it's going to be very positive for you if you stick with a budget. Once you set your mind to the task, you can do it quite easily. And you are going to find some traveling opportunities that are going to be available for you late summer, early fall. It is going to be very, very meaningful to you. You're going to have that opportunity. You are going to be spending time with people who are especially significant to you. This, for whatever reason, is very important to you this year. So remember, you are really going to have to tie up those loose ends, stop the procrastination, get things done, so you have a clean slate as you go in to fall and the winter period, beginning of winter, in this year. Very significant time. Well, that clears up that for the zodiacal summer horoscope. And again, telephone lines are open. If you want to give me a buzz, all you have to do is call me at 888-627-6008. My guest that we had today is from Colorado, and of course, we all know that they are having horrible, horrible fires there. And one of the things that comes out of a lot of this, sadly, there's a lot of people that have lost homes, and that is always, always such a difficult experience to go through. But I know, being from California, through the years, Californians, especially if they live in the hills or the mountains, there's been a lot of education about what to put around your home to prevent fires. In Santa Barbara, I can remember a horrific fire that occurred. And of course, in California, the fires are almost an annual situation. I can remember from the time I was a little girl, and it's just something that still goes on today. But they've become a little bit more savvy. And after a very, very bad fire in Santa Barbara, where you literally had fireballs that were just massive, that were rolling down because of the high winds, rolling down roads and streets, they really did a lot of thinking about what people could put around their environments, their homes, to create like fire breaks. And they learned about different plants. The devastation was just terrible. But they noticed that many homes did not have the devastating effects. They might have been affected, but not as dramatically as so many, when they had certain types of plants around and they positioned their trees in certain ways. So this is a big part of planning in that part of California that people work with. And one of the things that they work with are, again, those plants that are not as likely to catch on fire to promote the blaze. So this is something I thought that I might want to address, is some of garden tips, because here we are, we're at the beginning of summer. It is absolutely a wonderful time of year to get out and work in your yard. So many of you really, really enjoy it. But you want to look at what you can do for yourself, depending on where you live. And if you live in a desert environment, you're going to want to have those plants that are going to be more conducive to that environment. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have, fortunately, an abundance of water, but we have to be aware, too, because not all plants and not all different forms of plant life are going to do well here. I mean, an aloe vera plant outside just isn't going to survive. That has to become an indoor plant because it'll drown outside just from the sheer amount of water that we get and the dampness that we have. So they don't do well. But we have plants like rhodies that were imported from Asia. The mountains, the Himalayan mountains, they grow on the side of the mountains. They love the wet. They love the environment that we have up here. They just do absolutely beautifully, but they do require a lot of water. So in certain parts of the country, it's not going to work well. Now, there is a expert in irrigation and horticulture. His name is Steve Jacobs. And he's got a website, Nature Designs. You might want to check it out because he gives a lot of good information. He's out of San Diego. And he suggested that if you're really going to work with your yard, know your environment, number one. Pay attention to that. And like up here, it's better to use perennials instead of annuals. We all know annuals are short-lived. They're just very pretty. They use a lot of water. And they always are going to have to be replaced. But there apparently are species of perennials that are drought tolerant. And believe it or not, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a drought problem every once in a while. And we will have periods where there's no water. And so your plants, if they're not adapted in that way, they're not drought tolerant, they're going to die on you. We've had that happen with some roses. So your drought-tolerant perennials will live for a lot of years, and they're going to give you phenomenal color. And thankfully, we've got so many wonderful choices there. Also, one of the things that he brings out, and again, this isn't surprising for California, but it's true anywhere. He suggests if you don't need a lawn, eliminate it, because they're one of the most intensive maintenance and water-consuming plantings in a landscape, and that's a reality. You always are going to have to be out there mowing, if not every week, especially during the summer, because up here in the Pacific Northwest, if we have a little bit of sun, everything grows like a foot a day. And then with abundance of water, you're dealing with that all the time. And when you do, if you do choose to keep your lawn, he says, leave your lawn clippings. Don't bag them. Today's lawnmowers have a recycling feature, which allows you to mow without bagging the clippings. And what's good about those lawn clippings is that they contain water and nutrients that will benefit your lawn. So there's a need for less water, for less fertilizer, and you don't have to pay for your debris removal or dumping. And what you want to do when it comes to pruning, when you prune from the natural growth habit of your plant, you'll reduce the amount of pruning needed per year, and that's going to save you quite a bit of money. When you hedge and ball your plants, it's going to create a need for frequent pruning, and you probably are going to get tired of doing it yourself. It looks beautiful, but it does require maintenance and something that you just have to be aware of. And reducing water usage. I know even in the Pacific Northwest, we are becoming more mindfully aware of how to use water. Although we have an abundance of it, for which we are very grateful, this is something that people are becoming more and more conscious of because it is a resource you do want to take care of. So you just want to pay attention to that. And irrigation problems. You want to make sure if you have a watering system, a sprinkling system, an irrigation system, you need to check for leaks, make sure it's not overspraying, your broken heads, water pressure, trajectory problems, plants grow, and maybe where your sprinkler head was at one time, that's great. We had some plants grow so much that we had to literally put a pipe on one of the water heads of our sprinkler system that had to go up like about 2 feet so we could actually water more effectively. And that happens. Those are things that you have to be prepared with. And, of course, using mulch is always a very, very good thing. It cuts down on weeds. And you don't want to use weed killers any more than necessary. And it creates a barrier. Weed seed has a much more difficult time germinating, and it also decomposes and adds organic matter to your soil. So you want to make sure that you do, if you're going to be planting anything new, be aware trees grow. We have a tree that was planted by the side of our home. It's huge, absolutely huge. I love it because it shades our house during the summer. But it really was a tree that maybe one day will have to be cut down because it is a tree that needs a whole bunch of space. So we've had to prune it and trim it a little bit, hoping that it's not going to get too massive. But it's one of those, when it was planted, we had no idea that it could develop this phenomenal canopy, which, again, we love during the summer. But when the winter storms hit, it can really be a challenge. So those are things I just wanted to share with you because, well, this is the time of the year for the gardening. And also, I'll be sharing in future shows some tips about organic ways of keeping ants at bay and wasps and other pests because they're coming out. We've got them here in our neighborhood. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. I'll be back with you sharing a delightful antipasto tortellini salad recipe with you and a little bit more. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic. Safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Before I do the recipe, we're going to go to our caller who's been waiting very patiently. Caller, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. My initial is JL. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Hello, Brooklyn. So glad you're able to be on the show this morning. I'm looking at something, JL, when I'm watching you in my mind. I am seeing you doing a balancing act, and I'm looking at a lot of documents that I'm seeing in your right hand, and I'm seeing some particular forms in your left hand. I believe that there is a conflict with time. And the reason I say a conflict with time is that I think you are overextending yourself in some way, and you've got to take care of responsibilities. The papers are representing to me responsibilities, and you're just wondering if you made a mistake. And I would say, in a way, but not really. What I think is happening here is that you're becoming mindful that before you take on any new projects or say, gee whiz, I can do it all, you're going to think and say, I can take care of A, but B is going to have to wait for a while. I think what's evolving with you in a very short period of time is that you are developing the skill of being able to assess priorities. In learning how to do this, you are learning how to say no to certain people, to certain conditions. All of this is exceedingly important. It is very important. And the reason I say it is that I'm seeing you stepping into a positioning. I would want to attach the term management. I want to say it's a lower management type of positioning. It's going to enable you, when you are in this new positioning, to be able to assess priorities much more effectively. You're not going to feel like you've got to try to multitask like an octopus. So that is going to make you far more effective, and you are not going to allow personal emotions that maybe a year ago would have triggered you and caused a panic. That's not going to happen now. So you are growing into a whole new side of yourself, and I really think that this is marvelous. I like what I'm seeing, and it hasn't come without a lot of stress, because I think you've had a lot of stress, but I do think you are learning. And it's going to pay off quite well. And eventually, you're going to be in a positioning. And it's not immediate. It's going to be a few years. But eventually, I guess 5 to 7, you're going to be in the positioning of running your own business in the way that is going to ensure its success. You're going to do quite well with it. What's on your mind? What question did you have for me today?
Thank you, Donna, for your insight. I think my question is really more related to career and work. Lately, things have not been going well for me at work, so I'm kind of unsure which direction I'm leaning toward for the next few months, because once I'm done with this job that I have right now, I'm not sure what I'm going to go into. And I'm also waiting to hear from a school, because I applied for a master program, and so far, they put me on the waiting list, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get in.
Well, I would say have plan A and plan B. Remember what I said about prioritizing?
Yes.
You want to move forward right now, because the challenges that you're having in your job, you can work with this, and I don't think you're going to be out the door in 2 weeks. But I do think that it's time for you to look at where else you want to put yourself. What environment do you want to place yourself into so that you can acquire more of a skill set that's going to serve you? Let's say you wanted to be in marketing and advertising. Well, you don't necessarily want to run a cash register at a grocery store. So what you need to do is ask yourself, how do I position myself? Where do I go? Who do I interview with so that I get into this environment with a skill set I've already got? The schooling is a given. You're going to go on with your schooling, and they will call you when there is an opening. And the challenge is they've got so many people, but there's always people at the last minute, for whatever reasons, they're not able to make the commitment. They're not able to be in the school, so that creates the openings. And that's what's going to happen to you. I think there's going to be an opening that will come up around January. I wouldn't be concerned about this fall. Allow that to be. You'll take everything in stride as you need to. So the priority, I believe, is looking at the environment you want to put yourself into so that you can gain more practical working experience. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Wonderful. My dear, I've got to go. I'm almost out of time.
Thank you.
You are very welcome, and I appreciate the call in, JL. This is Donna Siebel. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And life's lessons, well, we're all going to go through them. Nobody's exempt. Sorry. I haven't yet found an individual that hasn't gone through the lumpy bumps of life. But remember, part of this is so that you can learn and grow into the greater part of yourself. And as you go through your experiences, keep in mind that if you're willing to be a good student, one day you're going to become a superb teacher. Example, well, you'll be able to demonstrate it. So enjoy your day, enjoy your life. Your blessings are many. Be grateful. I'll talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.